Welcome back to Moaning, guys. Welcome back to our mini moan series here on our YouTube channel. I just want everyone to know that actually this was not the format that I had decided this was going to be. In reality, what happened is I filmed all the videos and then all of the footage was far too grainy, and so I just used the audio and then I add some audio in at the beginning and at the end so it sounds more like it was intended to be a podcasty type video. It was not. So let's just dive into today's episode. As you guys can see from the title, I presume that's why you clicked on this, I'm going to be talking, ranting and raving without a script, just me being mad, about four quote-unquote heroes from the ancient world I absolutely loathe. And I was going to make the title just Heroes I Disliked, but that would just be doing it a disservice. Like, I genuinely hate these characters. And some of them are going to be controversial. Some. There are four characters, as you know, and I think two of them are probably going to be quite controversial for people to hear. Controversial in the ancient world, but like, whatever. So all these characters from the Trojan War, we have two Greeks and two Trojans, which actually was not intended. That just happened to be that way, that I realized that these were the four characters I was most passionately disheartened by, I guess is a nice phrase. So that's just how it worked out, and I'm gonna do the Greeks first and then we'll do the Trojans. But just so you guys know, the Trojan War took place ages ago. It took place in like 1200 BC, okay? We're not talking like when Athens was coming up, or like the golden age of Athens, or like Rome. No, this was age ago. This is like the Bronze Age, okay? This is Mycenaean times. And it's very famously the 10-year battle between Greece and Troy. And oftentimes Helen is blamed for it. I am on the team that says Helen had nothing to do with it and that men just want to blame a woman because they are incapable of admitting that actually they are the problem. So we're gonna talk about four problematic men. So the men are Achilles, Agamemnon, Paris, and Aeneas. So hopefully those all sort of ring a bell to you. We'll start with the Greeks, go into the Trojans. The first guy, let's talk about Achilles. So Achilles, you're all probably like, how can you possibly hate Achilles? I presume you haven't read the Iliad if you are thinking that. And if you have read the Iliad or have done any research prior to this, I don't know why you would, but in the event that you have, you'll probably be like, yeah, okay, fair, I can see that. Because Achilles is one of the biggest babies of the ancient world, in my personal opinion. He is such a mama's boy. It's ridiculous. And it's so frustrating to read that in this time of battle, he is still this way. Like, there's no part of him that matures the entire time. And it's just like, I can't even tell you how many essays I wrote in university. And I think, quote unquote, said, Achilles is a mama's boy and a baby. And professors were constantly like, you can't say that, but we know what you're talking about. So the first strike against Achilles is actually before the Trojan War. So there was a prophecy, there were two prophecies actually, when before they get into battle. And the first prophecy is when he was a baby and his mother finds out that Achilles will die in Troy. So she tells his father, Peleus, who's immortal, and they basically are like, can't travel anywhere. So he lives kind of like a sheltered life. And then later on, there's another prophecy as he gets older, which the Greek heroes know because they go to the oracles and what have you not. And the Greek heroes find out that they will not win at Troy without Achilles. So they know they have to go and find him. Now, Odysseus shows up at Achilles' home, right? He shows up and he's like, hey, we need Achilles. Now, Achilles so badly doesn't want to go to Troy that he dresses up as a woman and hides in plain sight. He hides among the maids in the room whilst Odysseus is trying to look for him and trying to find Achilles to go with them to Troy to fight this 10-year battle. I want to clarify, it wouldn't matter what he dressed up as. Genuinely, he could have dressed up as a caterpillar and I would still hate him. It is just ridiculous that he is supposed to be the greatest warrior, the greatest swordsman that Greece has ever seen, and he dressed up to get out of going to the battle. He was like, oh, that doesn't sound like a place I want to be, and literally put on a disguise in plain sight. Strike one, Achilles, that's ridiculous. Like, man up. I'm sorry, not sorry. Now, obviously, he ends up getting found out and he goes to Troy. We all know this. He gets to Troy and his mama boy, ego bruising personality comes out very quickly in the Iliad. It's pretty much in book one that this happens. And so long story short, we're gonna explain more in a hot second, but long story short, Achilles has his war prize taken by the king of the Greeks at the time, Agamemnon, who we will be discussing. So he ends up getting his war prize, his female slave, taken and given to Agamemnon. And Achilles says, fine, take my women, but I won't fight. And so what does he do? For 18 books, 18 of 24 books, that's chapters, mind you, 18 chapters essentially, of a 24 chapter book, Achilles goes and burritos himself up in his tent and willingly lets the rest of the Greeks die. Willingly. He makes sure that even his army doesn't go out. He's like, none of the Myrmidons are going out. I'm staying and they're staying. So the Greeks are getting slaughtered out there. And multiple times, the other Greeks from the camp do come to Achilles' tent. And they're like, dude, we really need your help. Can you come out there? And he just looks at them and he goes, no. Like what? He's too busy with Patroclus having tea in the tent. People are dying, Achilles. You're just letting people die because you are such a baby. And to solidify that he's such a baby, he spends his time not only hanging out with Patroclus in the tent, he then also spends his time on the beach crying to his mother about how hard done by he is. This is the greatest hero of the ancient world, supposedly. I cannot stand him, if you can't hear that in my voice. I genuinely cannot stand him. Now, granted, towards the end of the book, when he, you know, shows up and actually fights, and then he drags Hector's body around Troy, I was all Team Achilles. I was like, thank fuck he got out of there. But the fact that he moped for 18 books, and he burritoed himself up, and he just had a strop. He had a massive temper tantrum, and the fact that he did that does not make up for the fact that he finally came out of the tent. It just doesn't. It just doesn't. And even though he loses Patroclus, and that is heartbreaking, it's a heartbreaking scene where he cries and he like falls to his knees, I really felt for him. But at the same time, I was like, it's kind of your fault. Because if you had fought, Patroclus wouldn't have put on your armor, and then he wouldn't have died. I'm just saying, okay? I'm just saying. Now, the second Greek hero I hate, who follows on very nicely from this, is Agamemnon. So Agamemnon is the king of the Greeks, as I said, and he is just, ugh. I don't know one person who reads Agamemnon and thinks, what a nice guy. He's the type of guy you want to go to the pub with. Abso-fucking-lutely not. Agamemnon, okay, let's talk about why Agamemnon is hated so much. Let's start with before the Trojan War, okay? Before the Trojan War, he brings all the Greeks to the port where the boats are going to sail out, and there's no wind, right? So he's like, well, what the hell's going on? And he gets this seer to show up, this random seer shows up, and he's like, read the entrails of this thing and talk to the god and figure out what's going on. And the seer's like, ah, so gone touch with Artemis, rang her up. Turns out you killed one of her dears and she's very mad and you're going to have to sacrifice your daughter. And there is a brief moment where Agamemnon's like, my child, really, are you sure? Mine, my daughter, my oldest daughter, Iphigenia. And the seer's like, yep, that's the one. And Agamemnon then takes a moment to process and just goes, all right, someone sent for her. He drags Iphigenia down, she doesn't know. He tricks her and he tells her that she's going to marry Achilles, the best sword fighter, right? Well, mama's boy, we just clarified. So really, Iphigenia didn't miss anything. So he tricks her, has her come down thinking she's going to marry Achilles, brings her up to the altar, and then sacrifices her to Artemis so that the wind will pick up and he can go to Troy. He sacrificed his daughter for a battle, supposedly for a woman, that his brother is married to. Can you imagine sacrificing your own child for your sister-in-law, who's safe, mind you, she's fine, she's safe. That is just awful, that is awful behavior, awful manners, honestly. That is just so ridiculous. And then, it doesn't end there, guys. He then goes to Troy, and the reason why Achilles starts doing his whole moping thing is because of Agamemnon. Because Agamemnon, one of his war prizes, his slaves, is this girl called Chryseis, who is actually the daughter of a priest to Apollo. That was a bit of a mouthful. But she's the daughter to the priest of Apollo. He comes in and is like, hey, Apollo won't be too happy to hear that my daughter's here and not, you know, back with me. Can I have her back? Agamemnon says, no, fuck yourself. And then he prays to Apollo, who rains a plague down on the Greek camp. Because Agamemnon, his masculinity is so fragile that he refuses to give back his war prize and is willing to let his men die for it. Sounds a bit like a Trojan that we're about to discuss. But he literally allows that to happen and people are begging him. People are like, please, please, Agamemnon, please just give her back. We're dying. There is no safety. We die on the battlefield. We die in camp. We need help. Please send her back. And it takes him 10 days. 10 shocking days, a week and a half of people dying from the plague and then dying on the battlefield until Agamemnon goes, fine. You what? Are you joking? You let people die for 10 days? What, do you think the god would get tired and he'd be like, oh, you know, it's been 10 days, they learned their lessons. Like, no, that's not how the gods work, Agamemnon. Ridiculous behavior. And so then he gives back Chryseis to her dad, and he then, once again, masculine fragility is mad in this book, and he then has to take Achilles' woman in order to make himself feel better. What? You could have taken anybody else's. This is my argument. He could have taken anybody else's woman. He could have taken a lower rung soldier, a soldier we don't even know the name of in the book. We don't even get his name. He could have taken one of their women, but what did he do? He targeted Achilles, and Achilles warns him and says, if you do that, I'm not fighting, and neither are the Myrmidons. And he says, ha ha ha. Agron is really just out here to test people. He is a petulant child, in my opinion. Like, what is wrong with you? He doesn't have really many, like, great scenes in the Iliad. He's not really bigged up. He is known as being, like, the king of Greece, though. But, on the plus side, you know, Achilles gets shot in the heel, right? So that's not really, you know, he makes up for all of his mama's boyness because he kills Hector. His dying is sort of a bit, meh. But Agamemnon's death, he goes home, he survives 10 years of war being a petulant child, not really getting up and being in the front line. Achilles is the one who's on the front line. And so he manages 10 years of that and then gets home and gets killed by his wife in the bathtub. That is karma. So at least in death, we're a bit like, all right, that's fine with me. Like, I can handle that death for Agamemnon. So those are the two Greeks that I loathe. And hopefully you can hear in my voice that genuinely, like, there's just not a moment of love that I have for either of them. Like, no, Achilles redeems himself. That doesn't mean I like him, okay? He redeems himself, though. But let's get on to the two Trojans, who I strongly dislike as well. So the two Trojans are Aeneas and Paris. We'll start with Paris and then we'll do Aeneas, because Paris is just shorter. Now, Paris is the brother of Hector. He is the Trojan prince, right? He's the reason. The reason why I hate him is that he is the sole reason that the Battle of Troy is happening in the first place. Because there's a whole judgment of Paris, and the goddess Eris, she rolls this apple in between Athena, Aphrodite, and Hera. And the three of them, on the apple is written to the fairest of them all, and the three of them then find Paris, and they're like, you have to pick who's the fairest. And Aphrodite says, if you pick me, then I will give you the most beautiful woman in the world. And Paris, being like a 20-year-old or something, he's like, okay, that one sounds fine because I'm a lonely shepherd boy and I need to be touched at some point in my life. Okay, this sounds great. So yeah, because he's a little horny, he decides to cause so many issues, because then Aphrodite picks up Helen and gives her to Paris. You know, that was the deal. Aphrodite upheld her side of the deal. And then the Greeks invade. Unsurprisingly, the Greeks show up and they're mad and they say, we want Helen back. And the Trojans turn around to Paris and say, give him Helen back. And Paris goes, but I love her. Paris, you don't know her. Also, Helen, mind you, Helen hates Paris. The entire book, she's like, can you please let me go? Like, I want to leave. And Aphrodite is actually the one that won't let her leave. Like Aphrodite really tells Helen what to do. She's like, go and give Paris some attention. Go and do this. Helen doesn't even like him. And like, no one does. Why? Because Paris has caused this whole problem single-handedly. He has caused this issue. It's just childish. It's just absurd. It's just absurd that everyone around him was telling him, hey, give her back, please. It would actually, you know, save us a couple of years. And he's like, but I love her, but I really like her. So that everybody's kind of forced to fight for Paris, even though Helen doesn't really want to be fought for. Now, luckily for Helen, she does make good relationships in Troy, who's not Paris, because Paris is just a wimp. The entire time throughout the Battle of Troy, Paris's battles, literal battles, when he has to get down into the field, they are fought by his brother, Hector. If Hector was not there, Paris probably would have been slaughtered very early on, and then they would have got Helen, probably. But Hector, he's so lucky to be related to Hector, because Hector was like, don't worry, I'll do it. And Hector is a fucking good fighter. I will include him in an episode of underrated characters, because he's phenomenal. But Paris, imagine being related to this like that. Literally, Paris just wants to sit at home and oogle over Helen. Helen doesn't even want him there. Helen doesn't want to see him. Helen doesn't care. And then on top of that, you're the one who's keeping the woman there, and then you won't even fight for her. You just want to look at her. Everyone else has to fight for her. Oh my god, he frustrates the crap out of me. But he's not the most annoying Trojan. He's not. He's not the most ridiculous Trojan. The one, in my opinion, who's the most ridiculous is Aeneas. So Aeneas is our last hero. I know that this is longer than the other ones, but Aeneas is our last hero. And as you know, if you have watched this channel, I love the Aeneid, which is actually the book that is about Aeneas. I am obsessed with that poem. I think it's absolutely one of the most beautiful pieces of poetry that we have ever been graced with. Genuinely, I have a tattoo of it on my ribcage. I am obsessed with the poem. But Aeneas, my God, is he unlikable. So Aeneas is known as a really good fighter in Troy. He's like the second most incredible fighter, sword fighter. So he has a good rep. He doesn't really appear in the Iliad all that much, I won't lie. But he has a good rep. And then the Romans decide to take him, you know, X amount of years later. They decide to attach the founding story of Rome onto him, which is annoying because Aeneas cries the entire time the Aeneid. He cries. He is the only character that I have ever read who cries that much. Like, physically cries. So Troy falls, right? We all know this, obviously. The horse incident, all that kind of jazz. Troy falls and Aeneas must flee. Now, the first incident where he gets upset and he cries is when his wife dies. I gave him that one because his wife dies within Troy and then he leaves. And that obviously, very sad, we're giving that one to Aeneas. So then, long story short, he ends up in North Africa where he meets the Queen Dido and he decides to stop and fall in love with her. And he's like, wow, Dido is so amazing and I love her and this, that and the other. And then the gods see this and they're like, hey, you have a prophecy. Did you know this? You have a prophecy to go and found the future site of Rome. Not Rome, but the future site of Rome. You have to go and do that for the future generations. So you need to leave. And when a god, Hermes, is sitting in front of him and is like, hey, you need to go and do this. He starts crying. And he starts going, I don't really want to, though. I'm really happy. And I love this woman. And I love this place. And they're like, ha ha, yeah, no, leave. Right, so he cries then. He cries at multiple other points in the book. Whenever he has a point where he settles somewhere, and he'll be like, oh, we're doing funeral games. I'm quite comfortable here. Maybe we could just stay here forever. And then a god shows up and they're like, Aeneas, keep moving. You have to keep moving. And it's mostly Venus and Hermes who do it. They keep, I mean, Zeus is watching over them being like, why isn't he moving? He has one job. It's to found the new Roman race. So why is he stuck on this plot of land and he's not moving? And then every time they tell him to move, he cries. Every single time. Or he doesn't want to. I don't know about you guys, but if someone was constantly telling me, hey, by the way, your future is to found a whole new race of people, you just have to get to, like, some island in, like, I don't know, the middle of the Pacific. It sounds pretty good to me, you know? I don't really know, but, like, it sounds pretty good. Aeneas is crying the entire time, and it's not like he's by himself. You might be like, oh, well, maybe he's isolated. He has all his men with him. He has a good handful of men on the boat that come with him. He's not completely alone. He's got his son. His dad dies halfway through, but he has his dad for half of it. Like, it's just, he's just almost, like, looking for problems. It's like, he almost, like, it's like he wants it to be more difficult than it has to be. And the entire time you're reading it, being like, you know, if you just did it, if you just stopped crying and you just did it, this book, one, would be a hell of a lot shorter, and two, you probably wouldn't be crying as much because you would just be going with it. And unlike Achilles, which is really unfortunate, unlike Achilles, Aeneas does not redeem himself throughout the end of the book. And that's because he gets into a fight with this guy Turnus. He needs to fight. He gets into a duel with Turnus in order to win the hand of this lady, right, in Latium, in order for him to settle in Italy. He has to win her hand because there's already a guy who wants to marry her. So he's like, all right, let's duel. And it's just this really harsh moment where Turnus, like, gives up at the end of the book. And he's like, all right, you win. It's totally fine. And Aeneas still kills him. Turnus surrenders. Turnus is like, swords down, I'm done, that's it, you get it, I get it, you know, you win, it's fine, you can have her. And Aeneas still kills him. But you're just like, what? We spent the whole book with him crying and being too emotional to do anything, and then we get to this incredible battle that you're like, oh great, actually I'm kind of rooting for Aeneas at this point. And then Turnus gives up, and then Aeneas kills him after he's surrendered. That goes against everything. It's so frustrating. So like, there are more things about Aeneas that frustrate me, but then we're going to be getting into like analysis of the Aeneid, and I don't think anybody wants that. But as basic character overarching points, that is what I hate about all of those characters. They are four quote-unquote heroes who supposedly people like. Supposedly. People have written books about these characters who are like, these are incredible, blah, blah, whatever. I understand that they're great devices. They are great devices and they're great characters considering I feel this passionate about my hatred towards them, but they are also all ridiculous, childish, ugh. I hate them. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I understand these are getting quite popular, so thank you guys so much. And to all you new guys here on Monique, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button and that bell icon so that you know when I post next. And we will be doing more episodes in this mini-mome series here on the channel. So thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll see you then.